Howard Marks isn't just another investment guru, he's the guru other investment gurus read religiously. Warren Buffett has famously said he reads every memo Marks writes, and I learned something from everyone. Since founding Oaktree Capital Management in 1995, Marks has grown it into a $150+ billion powerhouse by consistently navigating market cycles with remarkable foresight. What makes The Most Important Thing particularly special is how it distills decades of investment wisdom into accessible insights that have influenced an entire generation of investors. Originally compiled from Marks's renowned client memos, the book has become required reading at top business schools and investment firms worldwide. Its illuminated edition features commentary from legendary investors like Seth Klarman and Joel Greenblatt, creating a masterclass in value investing principles that continues the tradition begun by Graham and Dodd's Security Analysis in 1936. Few people have what it takes to be great investors. Investing isn't reducible to algorithms. It's more art than science. The environment isn't controllable, psychology plays a major role, and cause-effect relationships aren't reliable. To beat the market consistently requires thinking differently and better than others. This is where second-level thinking comes in. First-level thinking is simplistic and superficial. It's a good company, let's buy the stock. Second-level thinking digs deeper. It's a good company, but everyone thinks it's great, so it's overpriced, let's sell. The second-level thinker considers numerous factors, the range of outcomes, probabilities, consensus views, how their expectation differs, current pricing, and potential price movements under different scenarios. Why is this distinction so important? Because millions compete for each dollar of investment gain. Markets are largely efficient. Prices generally reflect the consensus view. If you hold the same views as everyone else, you'll get the same results as everyone else. To outperform, you must hold different and better views. The prevalence of first-level thinkers actually increases returns available to second-level thinkers. Extraordinary performance comes only from correct, non-consensus forecasts. This creates a simple matrix. Conventional behavior plus ordinary perception produces average results. Unconventional behavior, combined with superior judgment, leads to above-average returns. Think about it this way. When everyone believes something is risky, their reluctance to buy usually renders it safe, because skepticism has driven the price down. When everyone believes something is safe, their enthusiasm has usually rendered it risky, by driving the price up. This paradox is at the heart of successful investing, and it requires thinking beyond what's obvious to everyone else. In the 1960s, the Chicago School developed the efficient market hypothesis, suggesting markets quickly incorporate all available information into prices, making it impossible to consistently identify mispriced assets. This led to the rise of passive index investing, based on the conclusion that you can't beat the market. But there's a critical distinction here. Markets are efficient in being quick to incorporate information, not necessarily in being right. Marx defines efficiency as speedy, not correct. The consensus view will likely earn average returns, while beating the market requires holding non-consensus views that prove correct, a difficult task when everyone works with the same information and psychological influences. This explains why mainstream markets are hard to beat, even when they're not always right. Second-level thinkers understand they need an edge in information or analysis to achieve superior results. They constantly ask, "Who doesn't know that?" about seemingly appealing investments. Markets aren't perfectly efficient. Human emotions like greed and fear prevent objectivity, and most investors operate within specific silos rather than across all assets. These inefficiencies create mispricings that skilled investors can exploit. Before investing, ask why bargains exist despite thousands of ready investors, whether you're missing hidden risks, and why sellers would accept prices offering excessive returns. The best opportunities often lie where others can't or won't invest, particularly in out-of-favor assets that professionals avoid due to short-term performance pressure. Consider this. Investment theory claims people are risk-averse and must be induced through higher returns to make riskier investments. During good times, people mistakenly believe they can get higher returns simply by making riskier investments, forgetting that if riskier investments reliably produced higher returns, they wouldn't be riskier. This fundamental misunderstanding creates opportunities for those who grasp the true relationship between risk and return. For investing to be reliably successful, an accurate estimate of intrinsic value is the indispensable starting point. Without it, any hope for consistent success is just that. The oldest investment rule, buy low, sell high, sounds obvious, but requires understanding what high and low actually mean. These terms only make sense relative to an objective standard, intrinsic value. Value investors determine a security's current intrinsic value and buy when price is lower, while growth investors seek securities whose value will increase rapidly. Value investing emphasizes tangible factors like hard assets and cash flows, giving less weight to intangibles like talent and long-term growth potential. The difference isn't between value and growth, but between value today and value tomorrow. No asset is so good that it can't become a bad investment if bought too expensively, and few assets are so bad they can't be good investments when bought cheaply enough. The price must be the starting point for any investment decision. Buying without considering valuation is as absurd as purchasing a car without asking the price. The Nifty 50 stocks of the early 1970s demonstrate this principle perfectly. Despite being America's best companies, their astronomical P.E. ratios of 80-90 eventually collapsed to 8-9, causing 90% losses for investors who ignored valuation. While fundamental value should determine price long-term, two other factors heavily influence securities pricing: technicals and psychology. Technicals are non-fundamental factors affecting supply and demand, like forced selling during crashes or mutual fund inflows requiring purchases. Psychology, perhaps even more important, can cause securities to trade at virtually any price in the short run, regardless of fundamentals. In bubbles, attractive morphs into attractive at any price. People justify buying overpriced assets because of excess liquidity or momentum, abandoning value considerations entirely. Marx outlines possible routes to investment profit: benefiting from rising intrinsic value, hard to predict accurately; applying leverage, which magnifies outcomes but introduces risk of ruin; selling to a greater fool, unreliable; and buying below intrinsic value, the most dependable method. Even buying cheap isn't foolproof. You can be wrong about value, events can reduce value, or convergence can take longer than you can remain solvent. Still, it's our best chance for investment success. Dealing with risk is the essential element in investing, because investing means dealing with an uncertain future. Most people think of risk as volatility, the ups and downs of price movements. This is how academia defines it, primarily because volatility is easily measurable. But Marx takes issue with this definition. He argues academics chose volatility as a risk proxy merely for convenience, because it's objective and measurable. But volatility isn't what most investors truly care about when assessing risk. Have you ever heard investors reject investments because its price might show big fluctuations, or it might have a down quarter? Rather, investors primarily decline investments because they're worried about permanent loss of capital or unacceptably low returns. Beyond permanent capital loss, many other risk types exist that affect different investors differently. These include falling short of one's financial goals, underperformance relative to benchmarks, career risk for investment managers, the risk of unconventionality, and illiquidity risk. Some risks matter to certain investors but not others, making investments seem safe for some but risky for others. Risk doesn't necessarily stem from weak fundamentals. Even fundamentally weak assets can make successful investments if purchased cheaply enough. Rather, risk often comes from psychology that's too positive and prices that are too high. Investors associate exciting stories with high returns and expect continued strong performance from recent winners. These pedestal of popularity investments may deliver initially, but entail significant downside risk. Risk measurement presents fundamental challenges. First, it's entirely subjective, an educated estimate of the future, not a fact. Second, there's no standard for quantification. Investors would never agree on a single number representing an investment's riskiness. Third, risk is deceptive. Conventional risks are easy to factor in, but rare, improbable disasters make investments seem safer than they truly are. Perhaps most importantly, risk can't be measured definitively even after the fact. Many possible futures exist, but only one occurs. The performance of your portfolio under that one scenario says nothing about how it would have fared under the many alternative histories. A portfolio might be set up to withstand 99% of scenarios, but fail because the remaining 1% materializes. Great investing requires both generating returns and controlling risk, and recognizing risk is an absolute prerequisite for controlling it. Risk means uncertainty about which outcome will occur and the possibility of loss when unfavorable ones do. Recognizing risk often starts with understanding when investors are paying too little attention to it, being too optimistic, and paying too much for assets. High risk comes primarily with high prices. For value investors, high risk and low prospective return are two sides of the same coin, both stemming from high prices. In bull markets, people tend to forget this truth and embrace risk-taking to excess, saying, "Risk is my friend." But risk tolerance is antithetical to successful investing. When people aren't afraid of risk, they'll accept it without compensation, and risk premiums disappear. There are few things as risky as the widespread belief that there's no risk, because only when investors are suitably risk-averse will returns incorporate appropriate risk premiums. A prime element in risk creation is the belief that risk is low or gone altogether. This dangerous belief drives up prices and encourages risky actions despite low prospective returns. In 2005-2007, the belief that risk had been banished caused prices to rise to bubble levels. Dangerous fairy tales circulated about global risk reduction through central bank management, globalization, securitization, tranching, borrower-friendly terms, and improved modeling. But risk cannot be eliminated. It just gets transferred and spread. Developments that make the world look less risky are usually illusory and tend to make it more risky. The reality of risk is less straightforward than perception. People overestimate their ability to recognize risk while unknowingly accepting and contributing to its creation. Risk arises as investor behavior alters the market, bidding up assets and lowering prospective returns while ceasing to demand adequate risk premiums. This creates the perversity of risk. The market responds to investors' behavior with their increasing confidence, creating more to worry about. Outstanding investors are distinguished as much for their ability to control risk as for generating returns. While high absolute returns get attention, superior risk-adjusted performance is what truly matters. Great investors take risks that are less than commensurate with their returns, demonstrating consistency and avoiding disasters over decades. Risk control is invisible during good times because risk itself is covert. It's the possibility of loss that becomes observable only when negative events occur. Like germs that cause illness only when they take hold, risk gives rise to loss only when adversity strikes. The absence of loss doesn't mean risk wasn't present or that risk control wasn't needed. In inefficient markets, a skilled manager can achieve the same return as a benchmark while taking less risk, an accomplishment that deserves more attention than simply earning higher returns at the same risk level. The ideal is capturing upmarket gains while bearing below-market risk. An excellent investor may achieve the same or slightly lower returns than others, but with significantly less risk. However, this accomplishment remains subtle and hidden during stable or rising markets when risk isn't tested. Since good market years typically outnumber bad ones, risk control's cost in foregone returns can seem excessive. But prudent investors understand its value even when it isn't needed, like homeowners who feel good about having insurance even without a fire. Bearing risk unknowingly is a huge mistake often made by those who buy securities that are highly esteemed at a particular time. In contrast, intelligent acceptance of recognized risk for profit underlies some of the wisest, most profitable investments, even though most investors dismiss them as dangerous speculations. The investor's job is to intelligently bear risk for profit, and doing this well separates the best investors from the rest. Like life insurance companies, successful investors are aware of risks, can analyze them, diversify appropriately, and ensure they're well paid to bear them. While risk control is essential, risk bearing isn't inherently unwise. It's part of most investment strategies and can be done well or poorly. The key distinction is between risk control and risk avoidance. The latter leads to return avoidance as well. The road to investment success runs through risk control more than aggressiveness, as results are determined more by avoiding losers than finding great winners. Most investors are trend followers, but superior investing requires second-level thinking that diverges from the crowd. Warren Buffett advises greater prudence when others show less, the essence of contrarianism. The logic of crowd error is almost mathematical. Markets swing between extremes. These movements are driven by the herd. Market tops occur when the last potential buyer becomes one. And since no one remains to turn bullish, the market stops rising. At extremes created by what most people believe, most people are wrong. Therefore, investment success requires diverging from the crowd, buying when others hate assets, and selling when they love them. While once-in-a-lifetime market extremes seem to occur roughly once a decade, capitalizing on them requires detecting when prices have significantly diverged from intrinsic value, having the stomach to defy conventional wisdom, experience to support this behavior, and patient constituencies. Contrarianism isn't a guaranteed moneymaker. Often there aren't great market excesses to bet against, and even when markets are overpriced, they can remain that way or become more extreme for years. The pain when trends go against you can be excruciating. Sometimes contrarianism itself becomes too popular, making it hard to distinguish from herd behavior. Most importantly, successful contrarianism must be based on reason and analysis. You must know why the crowd is wrong, not just bet against them. As David Swensen says, investment success requires sticking with positions made uncomfortable by their variance with popular opinion. The most profitable actions are definitionally contrarian, buying when everyone sells, at low prices, or selling when everyone buys, at high prices. These actions feel lonely and uncomfortable, precisely because most people aren't doing them. The paradox of investing is that things everyone agrees on are usually wrong. When everyone believes something is a great investment, it simply cannot be so. If everyone likes it, it's probably because it has been performing well, suggesting future performance may be subpar. The price likely reflects widespread adulation, limiting further appreciation. Popular areas attract too much capital, eliminating bargains, and when the crowd changes its mind, prices could collapse. Superior investors find quality others don't appreciate and wait for the market to recognize it. This requires being unconventional, perceptive, and willing to be lonely. As Mark says, large amounts of money aren't made by buying what everybody likes, they're made by buying what everybody underestimates. The best opportunities are usually found among things most others won't do. Portfolio building requires buying the best investments, making room by selling lesser ones, and avoiding the worst. This process demands a list of potential investments, estimates of intrinsic value, price comparisons, and risk understanding. Investment is the discipline of relative selection, a rigorous comparative process. We must find the best investments from what's available, making relative decisions regardless of whether markets are depressed or elevated. Our goal isn't finding good assets, but good buys. It's not what you buy, it's what you pay. A high-quality asset can be a bad buy, and a low-quality asset can be a good one. Most investors get into trouble by mistaking objective merit for investment opportunity. Bargains emerge through essentially the opposite process that creates bubbles. While bubbles form when popularity drives prices beyond reason, bargains typically display objective defects. They result from investor irrationality, incomplete understanding, or failure to overcome biases. Bargain assets are ignored or scorned, their prices have usually been falling, and they remain highly unpopular. Capital flees from them, and few can imagine reasons to own them. The necessary condition for bargains is that perception must be considerably worse than reality. The best opportunities are found among assets that are little known and not fully understood, fundamentally questionable on the surface, controversial or scary, deemed inappropriate for respectable portfolios, unpopular and unloved, trailing poor returns, and recently subject to disinvestment rather than accumulation. Marx's early career success came from focusing on underappreciated areas like convertible securities, high-yield, junk, bonds, and distressed debt securities, securities most institutions avoided due to perceived risk or complexity. As he notes, investment bargains needn't have anything to do with high quality. In fact, things tend to be cheaper if low quality has scared people away. Patient opportunism, waiting for bargains, is often your best strategy in investing. Rather than chasing investments, it's better to wait for them to come to you. Buffett compares investing to baseball, noting that unlike batters, investors don't have to swing. They can wait for the perfect pitch. Investing is the greatest business in the world because you never have to swing. All day you wait for the pitch you like, then when the fielders are asleep, you step up and hit it. Recognizing the limits of our knowledge is essential to successful investing. Marx firmly believes that predicting macroeconomic developments consistently is nearly impossible, as evidenced by his analysis of Wall Street Journal economic polls showing forecasts for interest rates and exchange rates were off by an average of 15%. These forecasts failed to anticipate major changes when accurate predictions would have been most valuable, and typically just extrapolated current conditions. While some forecasters occasionally made accurate predictions, they rarely did so consistently. The key insight is that forecasts are least likely to be correct precisely when they would be most valuable, during pivotal market shifts. Marx categorizes investors into two schools, the overconfident, I know school, who believe they can predict the future, and the more cautious, I don't know school, who acknowledge limitations and invest accordingly. This distinction matters tremendously, as those who recognize the unknowable future tend to diversify, hedge, and maintain capital reserves, positioning them to survive crashes and capitalize on the opportunities that follow. Market cycles present investors with a profound challenge. They're inevitable, they dramatically influence performance, yet they remain unpredictable in extent and timing. We must cope with a force that will greatly impact our investments but remains largely unknowable. Simply redoubling efforts to predict cycles isn't the answer, as superior investing results come from knowing more than others, not from trying to time market movements that defy consistent prediction. Rather than ignoring cycles entirely with a buy-and-hold approach, Marx advocates a third path, figuring out where we stand in each cycle and acting accordingly. While we can't predict turns with precision, we must strive to understand our current position. Taking the market's temperature through inference, interpreting everyday events for what they reveal about investor psychology and market climate, provides actionable insight without requiring forecasts. When others exhibit reckless confidence, we should be cautious. When fear dominates, we should become aggressive. Marx provides a practical framework for assessing market conditions through observation rather than prediction. He suggests examining whether investors are optimistic or pessimistic, how media portrays markets, how novel investment schemes are received, capital availability, P/E ratios and yield spreads. Defensive investing emphasizes avoiding losses rather than maximizing gains. Unlike professional tennis, where skilled players can reliably hit winners, investing involves many random variables outside our control: market behavior, management decisions, government actions, and natural events. The best investors recognize this uncertainty and play defensively, like amateurs in tennis who win by avoiding mistakes rather than hitting winners. Investing resembles soccer more than American football. The same players must handle both offense and defense throughout the game without clear signals when to switch between them. Investors must decide whether to emphasize aggressive tactics for above-average gains, offense, or focus primarily on not doing the wrong thing, defense. Defense isn't merely avoiding bad outcomes, but seeking higher returns through avoiding minuses rather than including pluses. It involves excluding losers through due diligence, high standards, low prices, and generous margin for error, while also avoiding poor years through diversification and limits on overall risk. Concentration and leverage exemplify offense, potentially adding returns, but harmful when they don't work. The critical element in defensive investing is what Warren Buffett calls margin of safety, or margin for error, one of Graham's greatest contributions to investing. While making successful investments when the future unfolds as expected isn't difficult, defensive investors consider how they'll fare if the future disappoints. Margin for error makes outcomes tolerable even when expectations aren't met. In lending, this means ensuring loans can be repaid even if conditions deteriorate. The prudent lender with high standards will experience fewer credit losses, but forego opportunities that go to aggressive lenders. The conservative lender won't enjoy the highest highs, but will avoid the lowest lows. Similarly, buying something worth $100 for $70 rather than $90 provides additional room for error if assumptions prove too optimistic. Low price is the ultimate source of margin for error. Operating a high-risk portfolio is like performing without a net. Slip-ups will kill you. Almost everything in investing is a two-edged sword. If it helps when it works, it hurts when it doesn't. The only exception is genuine personal skill. Defense can provide good returns consistently, while offense often consists of unmet dreams. Investing defensively means invest scared. Worry about possible losses, things you don't know, and surprise events. This approach prevents hubris, keeps your guard up, insists on adequate margin of safety, and prepares your portfolio for things going wrong.